Hi guys, with assessment season just around the corner and assessment point two for year 11 on the horizon, I thought I'd do a new episode of the Jogbing podcast and follow that up with a few more before the exams. So this week we're going to have a look at a changing economic world, and we're going to look at how we bridge the gap in development between those countries that have money in development and those countries that don't.
I love to cuddle chickens.
So the first strategy for development that we're going to look at is fair trade. Now, fair trade is a social movement. It's a kind of arrangement that takes place that helps those people in the developing countries of the world, the LICs in particular, the producers in those countries, to get a fair price. Okay, so farmers in particular, but also farm workers, are often exploited and taken advantage of. They don't get a price for their product that's fair and allows them to make a decent profit. Fair trade looks to prevent that. It does it in two ways. The first, and probably the most important one, is they guarantee a minimum price for the product. Let's say a banana. So no matter what happens to the price of bananas around the world, that farmer, that farm, those producers, they will get a minimum price that means that they will definitely be able to make a profit and grow their business. The second point is they get something called the fair trade premium. So we all know that fair trade products in our shops cost a little bit more than non-fair trade products. And that's because of not only the minimum price, but also this fair trade premium. There's an extra little bit of money added on. Now, when you add all of that up, that equates to something in the region of about £160 million worldwide every year. And that fair trade premium, that extra money, is given as like a lump sum to a group of producers, a group of farmers, and then they can spend it how they want to maybe improve their farm, improve their houses, maybe help to improve or build a medical centre for their village, maybe even lay a tarmac road so that their trucks can get to and from market in the wet season, even just simply buying tools to help them do their farming. And that gives them a better quality of life, allows their business to thrive, and the community will benefit from that. Fair trade does much more than that, but they're the two main things: fair trade minimum price and fair trade premium. They work quite hard as well with workers' rights, and they try to get workers to have a share in the ownership of the businesses. Fair trade most famously supports banana growers around the world, particularly in Costa Rica. Coca producers, that's chocolate, in Ghana and Nigeria, and also cotton in places like India and Pakistan. They reckon that around 1.5 million people work in the fair trade social movement around the world, and that probably encompasses just under 1,500 producers. It's huge, and continues to grow even today.
Work hard and be resilient.
And the second one we're going to look at is intermediate technology. I hate that phrase because it's so not intuitive at all. Another better word sometimes we might use is appropriate technology. So intermediate tech is suitable technology that's going to be affordable for people in LICs. It's going to be appropriate for what they want to use it for. They're not going to need to, you know, have a degree in physics in order to operate it. And even better, it'll often be locally sourced or bought rather than imported from overseas. The principle behind intermediate technology is that technology from our country is rarely sustainable, it's rarely successful if you just suddenly turn up and drop it in. I think the example I used when we did this in lessons is, you know, there's no point in putting a huge combine harvester in the hands of a load of Rajasthani peasant farmers. They are not going to know how to drive it, they're not going to know how to fix it, and also they don't grow wheat, so they're not actually in any need of a combine harvester. And you might think that sounds like the most obvious thing, but in the 1960s and 70s, there were a lot of examples of tractors in particular being delivered to different parts of the world and then basically going to rust and going to waste in fields. People ultimately in these countries, they want simple tools that allow them to make progress and improve their own lives themselves. They don't want handouts. They don't want to jump about a million different stages on the kind of development cycle of their farms. They just want those simple things. And actually, it doesn't have to cost a huge amount of money. Now, and a good example of intermediate technology, this is where we want to be savvy, and we want to make links with our case studies that we've already got. So a great example would be our case study of the Wakhel region of Rajasthan, where we looked at how they were trying to improve local kind of sustainable management of water. And they built a couple of things. One of them was tankers, which were just kind of brick-built tanks built into the ground to store water. You know, that doesn't require any metal, it doesn't require any imported materials, it's bricks created and fired in the local area. They also built pats, which were effectively dug out channels that siphoned off some of the water from the river into their fields. You know, again, that didn't need electric pumps to be pumping water out of the river. It was totally appropriate, totally intermediate technology. Okay. When this comes up in the exam, it historically, whenever they've introduced intermediate technology as a question, there's often a picture or there's a bit of stimulus that goes with it. So it'll have figure one, and in that figure there'll be a picture of maybe people working or building something, or, you know, there'll be some evidence there, and you've just got to have a look at that and understand, you know, what's local about it, how are local people involved, where are these maybe tools or raw materials come from, has there been any need for training, is it simple to use? So just to be aware, that's often how it comes up.
A mega city is a city that is mega.
Okay, the final one for today's podcast, but it's not the only, these three aren't the only strategies, so just be aware of that. But the final one today is aid. Okay, so aid is very simply money, goods, or personal expert advice that's given to a country or its people without any expectation of that ever being having to be repaid. Okay, so it's very different from a loan of money. Now, there are lots of different types of aid. You can categorise aid in a lot of different ways. So firstly, we can look at aid as to whether it's short-term, kind of emergency aid, so after a disaster, for instance, or whether it's kind of long-term, more sort of developmental aid, looking to try and improve the lot of the country over a longer period of time. Then aid can come in to that country sort of top down, from the kind of government down to the local people, or it can come in at the bottom and kind of work up, so directly to the people who need it. Now, top down kind of government aid can then be split into two different types, so bilateral, by being between two, lateral being from one side to the other, so bilateral being from one country to another, and multilateral, which is where lots of different countries club together and they all send to another country some aid. Now, multilateral aid these days is very common. It's probably the more common type, and most of that money is channeled through the World Bank, whereas bilateral aid might be sort of, you know, the UK government sending Nigeria a sort of direct aid package as part of their battle to fight AIDS and HIV in their country. On the sort of bottom-up local aid, it tends to be through charities and NGOs like Oxfam and Save the Children. They tend to be the ones doing that work. The final type of aid, it kind of sits in its own category, is kind of conditional or tied aid. Now, this is a bit of a sort of sneaky one, because you get countries like the UK who want to be seen to be giving aid to countries around the world and being seen to do all these great things. But behind the scenes, what you don't often hear is that there is a condition on the country receiving that aid. And the condition is often you have to spend the money on British companies or on our companies. And so actually a lot of the money ends up coming back to us. And it's kind of a way of our government or other governments around the world securing work and business for their country. So, I mean, it's not to say that the aid isn't necessarily beneficial. It often is. But it's kind of like, you know, giving somebody a sweet and then you know, eating most of that sweet whilst they hold it in their hand. Again, aid, examples of aid. It'd be good to have a range of different examples. Again, linking to our other case studies, the slum sanitation project in Dharavi was a great example. That project cost £300 million, and the World Bank part funded that. At least 50% of that money came from the World Bank. In Nigeria, which is our case study in the developing world for economic geography, you could talk about small charity called Nets for Life, who are providing mosquito netting to rural communities in Nigeria to help them combat the spread of mosquito-borne diseases like malaria and dengue fever. You could also talk about a little bit larger scale about the Adawan Healthcare Centre that was built with funding from the World Bank. Now, this was a centre in the north of Nigeria that helped them to do testing for AIDS and HIV. It also trained up local women to help encourage families to bring their children in for immunisations for things like polio, improving their quality of life. You could also link to the man-made river in the resource management topic, where Canada and the USA both gave bilateral aid to Colonel Gaddafi to build his crazy pipe. And a lot of the reason for that was because they were looking for oil and securing oil in that country. So, and Canada also got a massive contract to maintain the pipe and help repair and replace it. So that's a good example of tied aid right there. Now, aid can work wonders. You know, it can provide countries with a massive leap forward, particularly where things like dams are built and it generates clean water and hydroelectric power. But also aid can be criticised because it can lead a lot of countries to become dependent on it, and they keep coming back and asking for more aid. Many aid agencies in recent years are kind of under a lot of criticism. I think it was the Red Cross, or it might have been Oxfam, in Haiti after the Haitian earthquake. Several of the top aid workers were actually found to be using local prostitutes and were heavily criticised for it. So I think the other main issue as well is if the aid is top-down, government-provided, a lot of these poor countries are so badly run by their governments and corruption is everywhere that a lot of the money is misappropriated. It ends up in the people's pockets, the people in power, rather than the people that need it. So it's important to be aware that aid can be good, but it can also have some drawbacks. You need to be aware of those.
When you have an itch, you must itch it.
So what do I recommend you do now? We've gone through three of them. There's another three strategies that you need to have an overview of that help to reduce the development gap. I'm not going to tell you what they are because you can look at your revision checklist, but go away and revise those. And one of them in particular you need to know a case study of, and that case study is Jamaica. So definitely worth going and revising those. The next step I'd do, I would pair up with somebody or get in a group of three or four of you and someone create a quiz based on what I've said in this podcast. Maybe supplement it with a little bit from the textbook or revision guide that you've got. And then finally, maybe an exam question. Okay, I mean, I could give you one now. I could say, you know, explain how fair trade improves the development or helps to bridge the development gap. But that's fairly straightforward. I'm keen to encourage you all to go on to the our geography website and find past paper questions and use those to test your knowledge. So do try that. Okay, I hope you've enjoyed listening, and I'll try and post at least a few of these before you sit down to your assessment in the first week back. Good luck revising.
Geography is the path to enlightenment.